Hello and welcome to the Reconstructionist Podcast, where we help you reconstruct while you deconstruct so you don't self-destruct. Okay, this week I have Joel Houston. Now, probably almost none of you know who Joel is, but I'm going to be honest, you should. He is a professor at Briarcrest who is all about theology and all that good stuff, all the Christian stuff, but he also teaches on technology, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And man, you are not ready for what Joel is going to say. I'm just going to be honest. He's going to come at this in such a convicting, honest, and just plain true way of looking at this that some of you are going to have to seriously consider getting rid of your cell phones. And I know that sounds crazy and scary, but after listening to this, I don't even know what to say. All I'm going to say is that this conversation's amazing, and I cannot wait for you to hear it. If you check the show notes, Joel sent me a bunch of books and resources that you guys can read if you listen to this and you want to dive deeper. I highly recommend you check that out. I have nothing else to say. I just want to dive into this. So without further ado, here is Joel. Hey, Joel, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you, Aiden?
Oh, I am good. I'm super excited about this conversation because you showed up in a class of mine for the Coalition of Youth Ministry, and yep. You talked about this topic, and you grabbed my attention. And it was before there was like this documentary on Netflix that everybody watched and everything. So this was like the first time I was really hearing this kind of stuff. So I'm super excited to dive into this topic with you. I'm pumped.
Awesome. Awesome. Me too.
So for those who don't know who you are, could you just give a little intro to who you are, what you do, what life has been like for you with this COVID craziness going on?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So again, my name is Joel Houston, and I'm an assistant professor of theology at Briarcrest College and Seminary. We're just in Cairnport, Saskatchewan, so about 3 hours south of where you are, Aiden. For me, like you mentioned that class with Sid, Sid Coop kind of reached out to me and said, hey, would you mind talking a little bit about theology and technology? Because it was a course that I had written for the seminary, looking at the intersection between technology and theology. Because so pre-COVID, this was a research interest of mine, that had just kind of grown up through my graduate work. And I did that class, and then COVID kind of hit, and then it just became this really lively issue for everyone, right? Like Christians, non-Christians, people who are kind of trying to rethink work and life and worship and all those things. So yeah, like, so for me, I guess like COVID, I don't want to be the guy who is like, I was right, but like, I felt like I was right. Like just that, well, and I mean, it's not just me. I mean, the documentary, you know, Netflix, we talked about the social dilemma, like a lot of us, I think in society have just sensed that this is an issue we have to deal with. And like, a lot of us have seen it as this kind of Faustian bargain, like where we've all got an iPhone and that's sweet, but like it's actually brought a ton of challenges and has changed a lot of things in our lives. And so it's been this ongoing conversation, and I'm super grateful to kind of continue that conversation with you and to continue to look at it in the context of church and the academy and the like. So,
yeah. So right off the gate, I want to ask you like the loaded question, which I know there's no easy answer to, but is technology good?
Right. So the answer is no. No, just kidding. Yeah, you're right. And I mean, like your comment is a good one where you're like, it's a loaded question and it's a complex one. But it's one that often we start with, and almost as quickly as we'll ask the question, is technology good? People are going to give you this answer. Technology isn't good or bad. It's how you use it, right? It's the kind of guns don't kill people, people kill people response. Yeah. And there's a part of us, I think, like intuitively, we're like, yeah, like we get that, right? Like the same phone that can look up pornography or could slander someone on social media can also look up a Bible study or could be a podcast like this, right? So obviously, right? It's all about how you use it. But I think that if we jump too quickly to that answer, we're going to miss a ton of really important thinking that we can do, some really important conversations that we can have about technology that actually show us that it's a little bit more complicated than that. And I'll kind of explain a little bit of what I mean. To look at the gun analogy, right? I don't know if it was Charlton Heston, whoever, the NRA guy said that, you know.
Yeah.
People, you know, naturally respond to that. Eddie Izzard is this comedian who is just like, yeah, people kill people. He's like, but I think the gun helps, you know. And his point was, guns are specifically designed to carry out a particular task. And that task is often inflicting mortal damage upon a living thing, right? And so too, technology is designed with specific ends in mind, specific goals in mind. And some of those goals are things that we don't often think about or look at. And one of the things I think that, you know, the social dilemmas brought up, but even that we notice from our personal experience, is that our phones are designed to increase maximal user engagement, right? Mm. They're designed to have us be on them constantly, deeply, frequently. I often think it's funny, you know, I've got my phone here charging it right now. It's funny, if you ever see people looking at their phone, they hold it like a child, you know, it's like tenderly, like, and just like just softly holding their phones, right? Like gazing at them, right? We just sort of, even just like the kind of sleek surfaces, they make us want to hold them, but then the bright colors they draw in our minds and the kinds of bells and whistles, you know, the notifications and the pings and things like that. And, you know, even all the way down to the way software is engineered, like, you know, film recommendations, right? Like at the end of a YouTube video, it's like, it'll just autoplay something else. And then even to the point where you notice, what are the things that you have to actively engage in order to change them? So for example, YouTube just starts with autoplay. You actually have to go in there and stop it. Well, why isn't that a setting that I can choose versus one that I have to choose against, right? So, I mean, all of these things to say, you know, is technology good? It's like, well, hang on. Like, what kinds of goals is technology geared towards? And then let's evaluate it on that basis, right? And that's going to help us make a bit of a more informed decision. If I could say one more thing about it, you know, this has to do with how we value things in life. So for you and I, Aiden, to look at the world, you and I might see different things as either beneficial or disadvantageous. And the way that we look at the world will say, you know, I think this is a problem or I think this is a problem. So there's no value-free way of looking at the world, right? So for somebody else, climate change might be a big problem. And for somebody else, it might be like, well, great, it's going to be warmer. So what's the big deal, right? And obviously, those are two different systems. But for the record, I think climate change is probably real, like, and it's probably bad. Okay? So, you know, your listeners are like, who's this loser? But like, right, the point is, we see different things and it has to do with how we value the world. And because humans are valuing creatures, everything we do is kind of going to be a little bit more complex than just saying, was that good or bad? It's like, what were the values involved?
Yeah. No, and that's good. And the hard thing is, like, so I just started this podcast recently when we're recording this. And so there was no real way for me to get the word out that was as effective as Facebook. And even the funny thing is I started advertising it just to see, because Facebook's like, hey, we got $10 credit. So I'm like, okay, I'll see. And like, the truth is, before I started using the free advertising on Facebook for the podcast, I was super against the targeted marketing. But then as someone who's doing it, it's like, this works. Like, I got a lot more people clicking. So I have mixed feelings of how I feel about it, where it's like, yeah, I don't like target marketing, but as an advertiser, I very much like target marketing. So I want to ask you, like, I obviously I'm polarized. Other people are polarized. But what are some of the like big concerns that you have towards social media and technology in general? Like, what are some of the big things that are actually kind of concerning to you?
Yeah, that's really good. How much time do you have? I might have said this in the class where we had talked a little bit, but like, I am straight up, I'm a technological pessimist. Like, I'm not excited about where this is all going. And I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. So just with that grain of salt in mind, I just want to be careful. Like, we don't want to silver lining this too quickly. Like, we really need to just take stock of this. And I start here because we have almost incontrovertible data that suggests that our technology usage is driving things like anxiety and depression and violence and things like the sex trade, like, right, these kinds of global issues that are really serious things. And if we just jump to, yeah, but I can text my grandma anytime I want, we're gonna miss some of this really important stuff. So let's talk about some concerns. So one is, and here's kind of maybe a big theological word, but I'll explain it. I think technology is de-incarnating us. And by that, I simply mean, I think it's removing us out of shared physical spaces with each other and out of the good physical world that God's created. Okay. Mm. So often I think because technology presents low barrier accessibility. So for example, if I want to chat with you, Aiden, I can just hop on my phone. I can just shoot you text and I'm done. That's a lot easier than driving to Saskatoon, booking time with you, getting together, making a coffee and chatting face to face. But the latter option, the one where I come to Saskatoon, we have coffee together face to face, is going to heal and nurture our souls in a way that texting just can't do. But we revert to texting because it's easier. So, so you know, we think to ourselves, well, I want to learn about another culture. Well, I'm going to kind of Google it, or maybe I'm going to, you know, whatever, get on Wikipedia, whatever. Versus, you know, back in the day, like actually meeting somebody from, you know, Japan or somebody who's indigenous or whatever, somebody from Europe or traveling to Europe or something like that. So again, it's sort of, right, it's pulling us back from the world because it's easier. And we like that. It's more convenient. And then it's fooling us. And what it's doing, it's creating what we call a simulacrum, like a kind of a facsimile of reality where we're like, oh, no, Aiden and I, we're good friends. Like we text all the time. It's like, but that's not what a friendship is. That's never been what a friendship is. You know, friendships imply burden and effort, right? And congeniality and sharing and mutuality. But it's like, we think that we're getting that with tech. So it de-incarnates us. And it tricks us into thinking that we're getting the same thing. And as a result, this is a bold thing. I think that actually makes us less human because when we're fully in communion with one another and in God's world, that pulls us up, that draws us into the world that God's made, and that makes us, it shapes us in the ways that God designed. But technology, because it's an instrument of humanity that's applied to those ends, right? It doesn't do the same thing. Okay. So I think like that's kind of one of my really, really big concerns. A second big concern is that it's creating a kind of enmity and hostility between us that is counterproductive to actual human flourishing. So social media, there's a great book by Jaron Lanier called 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now. So, you know, he kind of tells you this, spoiler alert, right? He's not an optimist either. And if it's helpful for you, Aiden, and your listeners, I can send you the books, anything that we talk about, I'll give you a list. Yeah. But, you know, he talks about like social media is designed for clicks, just like everything is. You talked about targeted media. And what gets clicks on social media is outrage, right? Nuanced, sensitive, quiet discourse, people aren't interested in. It's boring, right? We want to know what was the inflammatory thing somebody said about this or you know, like big sensationalist news that isn't big on the details, right? But is kind of, it gets in our face. And we click on that. And then what, again, the trick is that it's like, we think that we're having a discourse, but we're not. It's like almost literally like two dudes, it's usually guys arguing, whatever, yelling at the top of their lungs at each other on social media and people thinking like, oh yeah, that's the way that the world is. But that's not like, you know, I mean, isn't it funny? Like, I don't know if you or your listeners, like we have these experiences, right? Where if we're heated with somebody, you know, maybe we had a little fight. And in our minds, we like play the dialogue in our head, you know, we're like, and they're like this, and I was like this, you know, and then we think about how we're going to fight with them. And then we see them and it's like the face-to-face draws out this empathy in us, right? We see their feelings and we're just like, oh man, like, I'm sorry, I was a jerk. And like, oh, me too. I didn't mean to say it this way. Like, and this, again, this human connection brings the volume of the discourse down and the richness of the discourse up. And suddenly we're able to have that human connection. And social media is just cutting out the middle. And all we get is the extremely high volume, high pressure discourse that's breaking it down. Those would be two kind of probably some of the biggest. And I mean, I'd love to hear too, Aiden, like in your own thinking, like, what do you see as kind of being some of those concerns too?
Yeah, well, I
kind of agree with you. I know that my fiance would be jumping through the roof over what you said in the first part, because she's always like, get off the TV, go outside. And it's true that what yeah. you do, you're like, oh yeah, this is way better. Even like yeah. last night, I went to Lake Louise this summer, and like I went there, was like, wow, this is crazy. These mountains and the way they're done and how blue yeah. the lake is. Like, it's absolutely, like, my mind was blown. And I was like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then I watched it on TV and I was just like, it just looks nothing like it. It's just so lacking.
Yeah.
Like when I was there, yeah. I was just like in awe of how amazing it was and how beautiful God's creation was. And on TV, it's like, yeah, it looks good. But like, there's something different about actually physically being there.
Yes.
And then in the same yes. way too, the polarization. I saw this recently this summer as well, where there was a video game called The Last of Us that came out, and I was a big fan. So I played it, and there's two major events that happened in the game that left a lot of people on the internet very angry. And so I, for a long time, thought I was the only one who thought this thing was a masterpiece, because online people were going crazy, and they were emailing the actresses and actors that played it and just like saying crazy, sending death threats. And it's like, what is going on? But that was the majority of what you saw. And then when I talked to my friends, they all agreed with me that it was like a masterpiece of storytelling. And then it won more game awards than any game in the history of the world. And so it's like, so clearly, but if you went online, you would have thought,
right.
oh, people hate this thing. Yes. I think it had, like, even the reviews, it had like a 2 out of 10, even though it's winning yes. like over 200 Game of the Year awards. It's like, this is not
amazing.
And so it was such an example to me, not even like yeah. just to dive into politics of like, yeah, like the sure. stuff we see online gives you a completely different feeling than what's actually happening. And so yeah. I want to ask you about that. Like, do you think that these social media platforms and tech has created a more polarized culture? Or maybe is culture actually as polarized as we feel it is? Or so that's two questions. Do yeah. you think that culture is more polarized than it used to be, like, say, 10 years ago, because of stuff like Facebook and Instagram and YouTube? And then do you think that culture is actually as polarized as it seems to be? Or do you think it just constantly feels that way because the only things that get clicks is either everybody sucks or here's why the guys who say everything sucks suck.
Right.
It's like that kind of narrative.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really good. It's interesting. Like, so maybe to kind of take the questions in turn, do I think that culture is a little more polar, or that like people are more polarized? I'm going to say yes. And the reason here is the kind of tribalism that technology can encourage. So I loved your example about The Last of Us, because so here you've got polarized views, right? It's an amazing game, or this was a total wash, you know? And what happens is, if you want to take a mediating position in the middle, and you want to say, yeah. well, you know, it was a great game, but I wasn't quite sure about the ending. I'm not ready to throw it out. What happens is you're alone, because you've got two really big tribes saying it sucked or it was awesome. And as humans, we don't like to feel alone. We don't like to feel yeah. isolated. And so even if we disagree a little bit, we want to identify with a tribe, because, I mean, we're tribal people, right? In the sense that, like, we like to belong. I mean, that's a normal thing. And so even when I think some of us like have the nuance and the silence in our minds, we still go with the tribe. And then we do this thing of erasure, where once we go in with the tribe, we begin to kind of conform to the views, because we're like, oh yeah, right, right. Those are the bad guys, right? And often we define ourselves by what we're against, right? Versus, like, I mean, how often is it, you know, we've been through this whole season of polarization. Like, how many times when we're talking about COVID, or we're talking about Biden or whatever, where people are like, well, you know, I think there's really great arguments on both sides. You know, we'd be like, you're a liberal, you know, and yep, like people yep. just freak out, because like, we're like, you're the wrong tribe, or you're in the wrong group. And so I on the one hand, I do want to say, yeah, I think we are more polarized, excuse me. But on the other, I've got this thread of hope where I'm like, nobody's that sure, you know, like mm-hmm. when the lights are out and we're alone and it's nighttime, you know, we're lying in our bed, we're kind of like, what if I'm wrong, you know? And it's kind of like that little voice kind of gives me a bit of hope, because it's like, it's okay to not really know, you know? And especially on this COVID stuff, suddenly, like, I haven't passed stats in my life. I can't read a graph to, like, you know what I mean? Save my life. And all of a sudden I'm like, you know, epidemiologists are like showing yeah. us graphs, and we're like, well, I think it, you know, it's like, I have no idea. So, you know, like, it's okay to not know. But again, I think technology is kind of pushing us into those tribes. a little bit more of the polarization. So yeah, so I think that's happening. I think that's a result of tech. And sorry, maybe I've kind of lost the plot a little bit and you can call me back to the second question, but yeah, I think I do see that happening. And then, it kind of carries into the public sphere, you know, especially when there's certain markers that will identify one so quickly, right? So masks have become a thing, right? Almost to the point where many people wear masks simply because they don't want to be hassled. It's not because they actually believe in the efficacy of masks, but that's not true all the time. Some people genuinely do, and maybe they are concerned. So you know what I mean? Like, so sometimes we're thinking the social media trains us or the technology trains us to see the world that way. And then we have difficulty decoding, I think, the way actually things are in reality, right? Where we think, well, someone's wearing a mask and we'll either be like, well, they're a true believer, right? Or something like that. And it's like, well, okay, well, hang on. Like, there's a human behind that mask, you know, which like presents an interesting thing, how masks like actually cover a lot of our humanity. It's hard to read some of those signs, but anyways, I've talked a lot.
No, that's really good. I think the point of sitting in the middle, it feels so impossible. Cause even, with that game, there were reviews who were like, no one's going to like my review, cause I'm going to give it like a 7, which is still good. But they're like, but I don't think it's a 10. And both sides are just like, wow, this guy's an absolute idiot. And in the same thing too, you see politics is so easy where it's like either Biden is the Antichrist or Trump is the Antichrist. And you need to, and it's like, you can look at both of them and go, you know what? I don't really like Donald Trump and I don't really like Biden, but there's good things in both that I can find. Yep. And for some people it might be harder than others, but it's like to say that there was nothing that they said that was ever good.
Right.
They're like, that's silly. And then with like COVID stuff too, to be like, oh, you either are fully on board with everything the government does, or you need to be anti-establishment and we need to separate from the government. It's like, what? Like,
Sorry, I was just going to jump in and just quickly say, and because we're losing the physicality, and I think rightly so, like, so I mean, social distancing, hey, if it helps cut down on the virus, great, like, no worries. But it is like, it pushes us more online, you know, and then because we become extremely online people, you know, it's hard for us to navigate those physical spaces, which again, to cycle it back, is actually what we were created for. So the more we pull ourselves out of that, the more we have to pull ourselves out of that, the more we need to have the concerted effort to get back in. And as anyone who's ever started out a workout regime in their entire life knows, it is way harder to get up and go to the gym, to do the work, to eat healthy, to go to bed on time, to stop drinking, stop smoking, whatever, than it is to just, sit back, binge on Netflix, don't worry about my health, you know? So we actually have to make the effort if we want to see the improvement.
So I want to touch on something that you were leading into, and that's the whole idea of like cancel culture. We're now, you see it everywhere, where the most, and I think in some ways, companies and people are getting better at recognizing it. Like, for example, James Gunn was working with Marvel and the Avengers.
Right.
He had tweets that were found from 10 years ago that he already apologized for 7 years ago, but they came out. There was a big storm on social media saying fire James Gunn, and like instantly without a conversation, they fired him. Disney fired him. They later on rehired him because they felt like that was a mistake and they shouldn't have done that. And then recently with Disney, there's another example where they had an employee who works for The Mandalorian, and I don't remember her name or her character's name, but she's on that TV show.
Yeah.
And she's been posting a bunch of controversial things on social media. And Disney this time sat down with her 3 times being like, hey, we're concerned. Can you stop? Can you stop? And the last time she was like, okay, I promise I'll stop. And then she posted one more time, another controversial thing. And then they fired her. So I was like, okay, that gives me a little bit of hope where it's like, we didn't just cancel her right away, as opposed to what we did to James Gunn like 3 years ago, I think. But like, there's still, to me, I look at it and it's, even I as like a pastor, am a little scared sometimes where it's like, I feel like if, like I, even my Facebook, like I've had Facebook pretty much my entire life. And I'm like, if someone were to go through it, I'm sure there's something ridiculous that I've said when I was 10 or 11. And so there's like this fear of like someone finding something that I said that's completely like, yeah, I don't agree with it anymore. But then you're like, nope, he's done. Get him out of here. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on cancel culture and how social media has like made this an actual thing that people can just do and go around and cause enough of a storm that people are just gone instantly?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great question. One of the interesting things around that, I think, is actually even the name, like cancel culture. Like, so culture by definition is something that is like, well, I mean, we have the same root word for cultivate, right? Like to build and to nurture and to foster and to develop. It's where we, even when you think of like the cultic act, right? The kind of like, you think of like Israel's cultic act in the Hebrew Bible, right? Is the worship at the temple and things like that. Like, so it's necessarily contributive and constructive. And so to suggest like cancel culture, right? It's almost like building a culture around negation, right? Saying like, this is the wrong kind of idea, the wrong kind of outlook, the wrong kind of person in some cases, right? Where people just don't want anything to do with another person. So I know I remember the Gina Carano thing, like from The Mandalorian, and you know, had seen, you know, that sort of swiftly applied. And it strikes me that, you know, so I think this gets back to what you and I talked about tribalism, right? So again, this person has espoused the wrong views. This person is not in accordance with the values of such and such a company. But what I think is actually fundamentally underlying a lot of that is our inability to, actually tolerate other views other than our own, right? So again, that vanishing middle, right? The kind of things that get polarized. But then the other is actually like an inability to forgive anyone for anything, you know? And this is what I think is actually, so when you get a culture that moves away from the gospel of Jesus Christ, the gospel of Christ causes us to recognize a couple of things. Like, so number one is that we are sinners in need of forgiveness, right? And that we recognize that we have this brokenness within us that the Bible calls sin, and that Christ, through his sacrifice on the cross, right, pardons us of our sin through faith in him. Now, the interesting thing is when you move away from that, you don't actually get away from that feeling that deep down there's something wrong, right? Like, I'm kind of busted. So what happens is if I see that in somebody else, that's something wrong, what happens is I think, and this is probably just needless psychologizing, but it corresponds to that brokenness in me. And I think if I can push that away from me, if I can cancel that person, if I can demolish that view, there's some kind of social atonement going on, right? But the undercurrent in all of this, and I think, like, you know, even as you said, I've had Facebook for 13 years. I think there's probably something I'd say. It's like, yeah, because you know what? We've all done that. And in fact, like, it's forget if it's online, because isn't that funny? It's just like, what about your offline life? Like, we say things, we do things, we are things all the time where, like, you know, we know that if God saw it or somebody saw it, they'd be like, that's the wrong idea. And we get scared. And so we start lashing out, right? So again, instead of the empathy, like, so even if somebody said, golly, you know, I said something 10 years ago, I just really shouldn't have said, and I'm awfully sorry. Like, you know, if people said, oh man, I've done that too. Like, that's okay. Like, do you hold those views now? Well, no, I don't. I actually think this. It's like, well, then what's the problem? You know, but we think it's like, it's virtuous to kind of slay the other because of that fear in ourselves. So yeah, I think that's prevalent. And I think in some cases, like, so it's warranted. So for example, if somebody jumps on the internet and they start saying, well, I think that we should persecute this visible minority or majority for these reasons, I think we would want to say, be careful. We actually don't want you to say that. You're inciting violence. Like, right. I think that's fair. But then we want to be careful where we don't redefine the word violence to just mean disagreement. Right. So for example, if I jump on the internet and say, well, I disagree with this chap. It's like, that's not violence. That's just expressing a different viewpoint, and that's okay to have, you know? But we lose the middle because of the amplification, as we've talked about. And so the answer is to burn down the internet. Like, I just think, like, it can't be rehabilitated. It's not in the technology. The algorithms do not, I use the word algorithm like I know what that is. In my mind, I think of alphabet soup when I say algorithm. It's just nonsense to me. So it's like, but it's true, is that it's like, okay, and for the record, I'm not advocating violence against the internet. Okay, this is going to be a classic example where, like, Houston said to burn down the internet, so I'm going to go find a 5G tower. Don't do that. But I'm saying, like, I don't think we can expect goodness and the kind of nuance to come out of the current forms that we have. And that's people's problems with technology, is that it's like, we're looking for a different solution, but using the same devices. And friends and fam, the devices are not built for that. Like, isn't there a reason that Steve Jobs didn't even let his kids use the iPads, that like most folks in Silicon Valley, like, severely meter the technology for their children? Because they know, right, by and large, that these aren't the kinds of devices that inculcate virtue. And I think, like, the fundamental thing is that it's like we've become a people who no longer desire virtue. Like, and that's why we don't change the tech. Like, so Aiden, you know, you sit down on your phone. We've all done this. It's like, you know, it's 8 p.m., right? The kids are asleep or the chores are done or whatever. You sit on the couch, you jump on, I don't know, Reddit or Twitter or Facebook or whatever you go on to, and you just binge like 2 hours of, like, you know, looking at memes and reading these inflammatory tweets. And, you know, you look up and it's 10 p.m. How do you feel? Well, you feel anxious. You feel maybe depressed if you've been reading a lot of sad news. You feel bored, right? You're like, you haven't done anything. You feel lethargic. Like, you just, your body's just been sitting there. You feel empty, right? All the same. Now compare 8 p.m. I knock on your door. Aiden, let's go get a grape juice at our local grape juice house, right? Because we don't drink wine. We're Christians. So we go, we have some grape juice. We're talking. We're having a great time. We're laughing. We're remembering, like, jokes or funny experiences together. Like, we're high-fiving because it's COVID's over. We've reached herd immunity. Like, right? And then 10 p.m. hits. You say, oh, I got to get home to my wife. Right? You get home. You think, how do you feel? You feel energized, right? Oh, I connected with Joel. You feel enlightened, right? Like, we had some good laughs. Like, maybe you had some, shared some good memories. Like, all those things. So, like, we know, we all know, this is how we will feel if I do activity A and activity B. But we always do activity A. Like, we're stuck on our phones, or we're stuck in this, like, it's this pit of, like, doing the same things and expecting a different response. And fundamentally, that is the definition of insanity, right? Like, you're just going back to the same thing, knowing it will make you feel bad. It's not the definition of insanity. That's the definition of addiction, right? Like, you want to stop. You can't stop. And you keep doing it. And if I were to, like, kind of bring in a theological analog here, and I'm working on a book that's talking a bit about this, is that it's like, we know, okay, so the definition of reason in this case would be, like, reason would suggest that you do the thing with the friend because you'll feel better. And we would say that it is against reason, because you know that this is not what you desire, but you do it anyways. And if Christ is the logos, right, the principle, the reason, right, in the beginning was the word, the logos, then to do the thing that is against reason, against the logos, is anti-Christos. It's an anti-Christian thing to do, right? Like, it's breaking that principle, that drive, that desire within us to seek wholeness and communion and fellowship. And so that's where, like, I think it's sinful to do those kinds of things, to give yourself over to these dehumanizing things. And the problem is, in the church, we don't like using that language. Why? We want nobody to feel bad about their phone usage. Or worse, we don't want the pastor to have to say, this is how long I was on my phone today, right? Because we're stuck in this. But unless we drag it out to the light and say, I need help and I need to change, then nothing will change.
No, and that's very true, because I know, especially this past year, the amount of times that I've stayed up till 3 a.m. doing I don't know what. And even, like, I sit there and go, it's 3 a.m. What have I done? Like, I've done nothing. Like, it just keeps going. Yeah. And it's crazy. And you said this, and I read this in a book, and I don't remember who said it, don't remember what book. Something about technology. Yeah. But they used that Steve Jobs example and a bunch of other things where it's like Steve Jobs didn't let his kids have iPads and stuff like that. And it's like, you never, as a drug dealer, you are never, like, taken from your own supply. Like, that's not what you do. So you intentionally are selling it, but you're not the one using it. And then you look at these tech guys and you're like, they're doing the same thing. And then you start to realize that maybe we're, and I've heard it before, and I've said, I was like, oh no, I can quit anytime, which is like the classic, that's, you're an addict. If you say, oh, I can quit anytime. That's what every addict says under the sun. So why? Like, so clearly, I think we could both agree that we're addicted to tech. What about it has made us, because it seems like such an innocent, like, when I bought my first iPhone, although it was an iPod Touch, so it wasn't an iPhone, I didn't think, oh yeah, this is going to be addicting or whatever. So, like, what has framed us to be addicted to it? But then also, like, how can we break free from the addiction, because it's honestly kind of feels, especially right now, like in COVID stuff, it feels impossible. I'm like, what would I do? Would I have to go outside? Would I have to read a book? Would I have to talk to people? What would I do? So like those are questions. Why are we addicted? And then what can we do?
Yeah. Really good. So why are we addicted? I think there's a couple of things. So one is the pushers, as you've rightly identified in Silicon Valley. I hope nobody in Silicon Valley listens, because I bet you guys are great in Silicon Valley. Okay. Like here, you know, we're polarizing it, but I do think so. But, and you know, they're doing their job. Like, so I don't think anyone is like, how do I hook Aiden and Joel on tech? But they are like, how do I make my device as desirable as possible for the consumer? Right. Which is, which is fair. I mean, you know, I mean, capitalism, we can have its own critique, but there are maybe thousands, if not more, engineers on the other side of your phone designing this product to be as engaging as possible. So it's, you know, the idea that we're addicted is because I think people are trying to get us that way, right? They're marketing products to us that are specifically designed to encourage that kind of interaction. The second reason is like, I mean, we desire it, right? Like we do want this. But there's a subtlety here that I think we can miss, which is we want what it promises, which is fulfillment, which is a sense of meaning and purpose. But we're getting tricked a bit, right? And so let's take alcohol, for example. So many times people will drink alcohol, like certainly because they like the taste, which is true, but perhaps also to like increase sociability, right? Or maybe like a kind of easygoingness, right? You think about people who go to a party and think, well, I'll have a couple glasses of wine because I want to be sociable, right? I want to be so, but look what they desire there. They're desiring to connect with other human beings. They don't know how to do it. And this product's going to help them, okay? So I think for tech, that's kind of what's happening. We desire connection, we desire fellowship. And so we're doing these things. So I think that's behind a little bit of the addiction piece. And then the problem is that we don't regulate our behavior. So there was a study done on rats. They gave rats cocaine, which I think is just like a great study to design. Like if you're a grad student, you're like, I'm gonna give rats cocaine. And it's just like, well, great, approved. You know, so they did this, and the rat would, you know, like hit the button and get the cocaine. And like, and the thing is, like, it would do it until it died. It would just take so much until it died, right? But they did another study where they did it with food, where the rat could push the button and eat the food, right? But then what would happen is the rat would get full and it wouldn't push the button anymore. So it had a limiting function. It knew when to stop. And our problem with tech is it's like cocaine, and almost like quite literally, it's triggering endorphins and reactions in our mind that are pleasurable. And so we don't ever get full. So that's why that's like why infinite scroll is from the devil himself, because it's just constant input, constant endorphin, right? And then like drugs, as you've rightly said, is we develop a kind of desensitivity to it, right? We need more in order to get the same response. And so like there are neurochemical things happening in your brain when you engage your technology that are creating in an addictive state. And an addiction occurs on a spectrum, as you know, addiction researchers will tell you that, you know, when we say, well, I can quit anytime I want to, like, so that just means you're a functioning tech addict, right? Like, I mean, but there's, you know, these camps where they're for internet addiction, you know, and I think sometimes we wrongly look at that and we say, well, how could that ever happen to somebody? It's like, yeah, have you checked your screen time stats? Like, how are you doing with that? You know, because I think a lot of us, we struggle with that. So anyways, I thought you had a second question, but that was the kind of like, why are we addicted one? Did you have a follow-up to that? Sorry.
Yeah. So what can we do? Like, so I like, and I've said it where it's like, oh, I quit anytime I want. And there's also this thing of like, I do want to not use my phone as much, but I also don't want to lose some of the, because there are benefits. Like for example, on Instagram, the way that I find out that a lot of artists are coming out with a new song is I see it on Instagram. It's like, it would be hard for me to figure out. And then even with this podcast where it's like, I want to post stuff to help people be engaged and to keep spreading it.
Yeah.
So how do I stop being addicted to it? But then is there also a way that I can still use this as a tool instead of it using me?
Yeah. Really good. So two, I think, responses. So like one is the scriptures call us to mortify the flesh, to put to death the deeds of the body. So there are some things that we desire on and through technology that are not virtuous. So this is just going to sound like super moralizing. So just, you know, skip this part of the podcast if you're getting hives, but like you don't need like 95% of what you think you need from technology. Like, right. Do you know what I mean? Like, some things are fun, like no question, but like, if we just pared it down to the essentials, there would actually be very little. So like the first thing I think is to actually do a moral inventory and say like, what is, like, I mean, the Philippians filter, right? Like, what is good, what is pure, what is true, what is lovely, like think on those things. So be tough with yourself, like be honest, right? And that's hard for us, but like cat memes, you know, maybe need one a week, you know, if you're a cat lover too, I don't know. So that's number one. And then number two is that willpower is a finite resource. This isn't my idea. It might be Tony Robbins. I don't know. Somebody told it to me and I've used it because I don't have very much willpower. So a lot of us think in our lives that the remedy to our solutions is pick yourself up by your bootstraps, right? Hey, you want to quit drinking? Just stop drinking, right? Hey, if you want to get a six pack, like stop eating unhealthy. Just do 100 sit-ups a day. I don't know how many you need to do. I don't have a six pack. So we think to ourselves that all I need to do is just try harder. And then we tell ourselves that it's like, well, this isn't that bad. And so we just get stuck in this infinite loop, right? We'll try harder. Well, I don't really have that problem. Don't have to try that hard. Oh, I don't, you know, right? Away we go. So you need to outsource your willpower. So for some of us, that involves getting apps on your phone, like that will limit certain maybe harmful effects. So for example, if you are stuck on Reddit and you need to be on Reddit, maybe you institute a block on your phone so that you cannot access Reddit, and you give the password to somebody that you love and trust, and that somebody who, you know, is not going to abuse the idea, but like they take your password. And then that way you couldn't access Reddit if you want to. The idea here is that it's like because if you could, you would. I remember, you know, those shows, they're like, oh, it was like MTV's Cribs, where they would like go to people's houses and they'd like walk through the house. Do you know what I mean? Am I that old?
Yeah. No, okay, I know good. What you mean.
All right. Yeah. So you should do that for one of your podcasts. It's like, this is my crib, you know, but anyways, my crib. So yeah, totally. So they went, it wasn't Cribs. It was something like that. And they went to like Conor McGregor's house, who I understand is he's a pugilist. He's a fighter. So they go to Conor McGregor. I've never seen a UFC fight in my life, but I understand he's something to do. So they went to his house and they're like walking through his house. And you know, like I gather this guy is like pretty accomplished. Like he, you know, is a successful fighter. He's somebody who's trained for a long time and has kind of reached a lot of his goals in fighting. And they go downstairs and he has on his table, there's this sheet. And on the sheet, it's like the house rules because he lives with a bunch of guys. And the guy says, well, what are the rules? And Conor McGregor identifies one of the rules. I don't know if it's the number one or whatever, but it's like no sugar or something. And the guy says, well, what do you mean no sugar? And the guys, and Conor McGregor says, because he's like, if I come down in the morning, he's got this great Irish accent, I won't try it. He says, and I see a cake on the table. He says, I'll eat the whole thing, you know? And so I have to have this rule that says there's no sugar in the house. And I just thought, here you've got this guy who is at the top of his discipline. Like he's shredded. He beats up other men for a living and, you know, has a Rolex watch. He's got everything he wants. Yeah. And he says, I can't have cake in the house. Nobody is going to go to Conor McGregor and say, you're undisciplined, because this man knows exactly what his boundaries are and has to engineer, right? Has to kind of like be ahead of himself to say, I don't have the willpower to say no to this. So I have to make it so that I don't even have the choice, right? So I think for us, for tech, it has to be that we have to get ahead of ourselves to say, I know if I have 2 hours free, I will binge on Twitter. So I need to block Twitter. And then in a moment of willpower, you make the choice, whatever you have to do to block it, so that when you are low on willpower, because it's a limited resource, you don't even have the option. So you have to read a book or you have to go outside. The problem is that it's like, it's just going to push you to some dark corner of the internet or some boredom piece on your phone where, I don't know, you're like rearranging app icons because you have nothing else to do. So that's what I think for some of us is that it's like, it's got to be pretty drastic. And this is, I think I said this in the class, and go ahead, quote me, but that it's like, I think for some people to enter the kingdom of God, they have to throw away their phone. Like some people, you can't have a phone. You're not ready. Okay. So if the Spirit's prompting you, listen to that. Cause it's like, honestly, some people are destroying marriages and families and careers, you know, because they cannot stop. And it's like, so you have to get rid of it. So some people do get rid of it. I don't care. If people need to get a hold of you, they will. People are just like, what would happen if? Those things never happen. You know, what if my car broke down on the side of the road? Literally everyone who drives by has a cell phone. So like, relax. Anyways, you cut that part of the interview if you want. I'm trying to make this.
No, that's gold. This has been amazing. I wish we could just keep talking forever. I think there's going to be a lot of people who want to learn more, because obviously there's only so much we can do in this format.
Yeah.
If you were to recommend something, if someone wants to learn more about this or about what they should do, what are some resources you'd recommend for them?
Yeah, that's fantastic. So there's a couple of different things here. So one is the book that for me was the penny drop was a guy named Nicholas Carr, who wrote a book called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. And that's a really deep dive. Well, it's an accessible deep dive. I mean, I think he was a journalist or wrote for the New York Times, very accessible. But he synthesizes a lot of the research around how our brains are changing in response to internet-based technologies. I think if you just want to know, like, okay, well, Joel, you know, you've said some strident things. Where's the actual data? Nick Carr is great for that. But I think if you said, Joel, just give me one book, I would say I really liked it. I think Catherine Smith is her name. I'll make sure that I get the title, but it's called How to Break Up with Your Phone. And she does this great, it's just a slender, slender little book. So low barrier entry, very small chapters. That's what I like. And it's like the first part is called The Wake Up. So she goes even shorter summaries of why this is bad, you know, or why we need to adjust it. And then The Breakup. So then gives you like a 30-day, here's how to make some concrete changes. And I like starting with that one because it's like, it's easy to read. You're not made to feel bad. You're not a bad human. You're all great humans, right? But you're not a bad human. But boy, if you want to make some changes, here's a great place to start. So I think it's good. I would also, for those that are maybe a little more philosophically minded, like get into the work of Neil Postman, okay? Amusing Ourselves to Death is huge. Marshall McLuhan, Ivan Illich. Again, I'll maybe try and create a little book list and get that to you if there's a way that you can make that available. But then let me just kind of make a little plug here too, if I could. Gonna rep Briarcrest pretty hard. So I'm gonna teach the tech course again, I think in about a year from now, which I know for many of us sounds like a long way off, but it does come up pretty quick. And at Briarcrest Seminary, you can take a course without declaring a major or anything like that. I think without even being accepted to a program. So if you like, so in a week, we sit down and we just talk through a ton of this stuff. And like, we eat together, we have coffee together. We kind of do this embodied thing that I'm talking about, but it's a place to kind of come and be like, things are kind of getting out of control and I want to kind of get back in the driver's seat with some of that, or I want some theological resources, I want some help. So I really think that community piece is huge. And if you can't do that at Briarcrest Seminary, do it in your church. Like, start a reading group, right? Where you're going to read one of these books, like start some accountability stuff, like that you're sharing your screen time, or you've got Covenant Eyes on your phone, whatever it happens to be, do it with other people. Cause I think to just circle it back to the beginning, that de-incarnation piece is huge. If you're on your own, it's going to be a lot harder to succeed. If you've got a friend, it's going to be easier.
That's awesome. Joel, thank you so much for doing this, for being here. This conversation's been amazing. I am so pumped for other people to hear this. Thank you so much.
Oh, man, my pleasure. And make sure, hey, if anyone's interested, make my email address available. This is something I'm super passionate about talking about. So happy to kind of keep it going with whoever else is interested. So thanks for having me on.
That's amazing. Thank you.